I want to start with something to do with Hanukkah, even though Hanukkah is over and we're the first ones to speak about Hanukkah for next year. But it also has to do with last week's Sedra and a comparison with Purim, and we're in the middle between Hanukkah and Purim, so it's still relevant. And the idea is an interesting idea, which I never spoke about here, so we'll spend the first part of the shiur on that. The Rambam says that the mitzvahs, the rabbinic mitzvahs, are not additions to the Torah, but they're enhancements of the Torah. Each rabbinic mitzvah comes to enhance and strengthen something that the Torah speaks about. And he gives an example that the mitzvah of Purim, celebration of Purim, and all the mitzvahs that go along with it, is merely to enhance and strengthen and point out something the Torah says. Torah says, Ki mi goy gadol, asher lo elokim krovim elov kashem elokeinu bechol koreinu elov. There's no great nation as Klal Yisrael who has God so close to them that whenever we call out to him, he answers us. And Purim shows that that's what happened. Jewish people called out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they fasted, right? They did tshuva, and the Ribbono Shel Olam answered them and saved them from Haman. So the whole mitzvah of Purim is to enhance and strengthen that concept that's found in the Torah. That's the Rambam. Thinking that along these lines, even though the Rambam doesn't say what I'm going to tell you now, but along those lines we could say the following. There's another pasuk right after that that also speaks about the greatness of Klal Yisrael. Umi goy gadol, asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim, kechol ha-Torah hazos asher anochi nosein lefneichem hayom. Another greatness of Klal Yisrael. What great nation has such a righteous Torah with all the mitzvahs that we have, that guides every aspect of life? There's no other nation that has such a Torah. And just the opposite, most of the world revere our Torah. They made it the Old Testament, or they've incorporated in their Quran, but it's they recognize that as the book of books. So it's a greatness of Klal Yisrael. That Torah was given to us, wasn't given to the Christians, it wasn't given to the Muslims. Perhaps Hanukkah enhances and strengthens that. The second rabbinic yontif. Right, because Hanukkah shows that we were willing to die and fight for our Torah. And the Yevanim tried to suppress the Torah. So just like Purim shows that we have a closeness to God, that when we cry out to him, he's there, Hanukkah shows that we're special because we have this special Torah. Okay. Now, let's take the analogy between Hanukkah and Purim further. Purim, therefore, Hanukkah represents the greatness of the Jewish people vis-a-vis the Torah, and Purim represents the greatness of the Jewish people vis-a-vis tefillah, prayer, avodah. There's only one problem. It would seem on the surface just the opposite. Because Purim is one day, and it's like Shavuos, right? It says, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, the Jewish people reaccepted the Torah on Purim. And Purim is one day similar to the Torah Yontif of Shavuos. This is one day where they receive the Torah. We've seen from here that Purim more aligns with Torah, whereas Hanukkah is 8 days, and it's more like Sukkot. And Sukkot is Avodah, the Karbanos and Tfilos. So what I just told you, that Purim is to enhance the concept of Tfilah, and Hanukkah, the concept of Torah, seems to be just the opposite. But truth is not like that. because the Yontif of Shavuos, and I think we explained this back after Shmini Atzeres, the Yontif of Shavuos, each of the Yomim Tovim correspond to one of our ancestors, the Avos. Pesach corresponds to Avram Avinu. The Yontif of Emunah, of belief, Avram was the choice believer, came to belief on his own, so Pesach and Avram go together. Shavuos is the Yontif of Yitzchak Avinu. And Sukkot is the Yontif of Yaakov Avinu. Now here again, on the surface, it doesn't seem to make sense. Because Shavuos is the Yontif of Torah. Torah is Yaakov Avinu. He's the Amud HaTorah. Yitzchak is the Avoda. That would fit more with Sukkot. Why is Sukkot Yaakov and Shavuos Yitzchak? It's explained in the past that there are two aspects to receiving the Torah. There's Matan Torah, there's the fact that God gave us the Torah, and then there's Kabbalas HaTorah. On Shavuos, where was Matan Torah? God gave the Torah, but we didn't receive it. And we didn't receive it directly from that giving because the Luchos were broken. When did we actually receive the Torah? On Yom Kippur. When do we actually get the Torah and begin to learn it and integrate it and fulfill it? On Sukkot. So Sukkot is the Yontif of Kabbalas HaTorah, that's Yaakov Avinu. Whereas the giving of the Torah from God's side shows how close God is to us, that's Avoda, that's Tefillah, that's Yitzchak Avinu. So the giving of the Torah is related to Yitzchak, because the giving of the Torah is God's closeness to us, and that is more the concept of Avoda. Whereas the receiving of the Torah, and the actual integrating and fulfillment and learning of the Torah is on Sukkot. And that's why we finish the Torah, we finish reading the Torah, which is our acceptance of the Torah on Sukkot, not on Shavuos, on Shmini Atzeres. Therefore, what I told you now comes back to be very understandable. Chanukah, therefore, corresponds to Sukkot, which is the observance and receiving of the Torah, which very much fits with what I told you, that Chanukah highlights that greatness of the Jewish people, that we have a Torah, and that we are willing to fight for it and die for it, and that God preserved it by us. And Purim is one day, represents the closeness that we have with God, which is through Tefillah. Right, and that's the sentence that says which nation is so close to God that whenever we call on Him, He answers us. Okay, another connection, another contrast between Hanukkah and Purim, and that is Purim occurred in Golus. In Golus, the Jewish people are scattered. Mefuzar u'mefolrad bein ho'amim, we are not united. Right. And we are considered individuals. We're not considered one unified nation. And tefillah is something that applies to every individual. Every individual has his connection to God. If we get together and do it b'tzibur, it's even stronger. But there are some times when the individual has the same power as the tzibur. When's that? Aseres Yemei Teshuva. During Aseres Yemei Teshuva, even an individual's prayer has the same power as a communal prayer. So prayer is something very individual. And therefore, prayer, which is the hallmark of Purim, Purim occurred in Golus, where we are considered like individuals. We're not considered a nation. And I'll prove it to you, because we say it every week. Ata Echad, the Shimcha Echad, you say Mincha on Shabbos. You're one, and your name is one. Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad, and who is like your nation Yisrael, one nation, ba'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael. When are we considered like one nation? In Eretz Yisrael. The Maharal Prague says this clearly, that Eretz Yisrael unites the Jewish people into one entity. That's where we can be considered a nation. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, we're individuals. Mefuzar, mefolrad, bein ho'amim, we are scattered amongst the nations of the world. Therefore, Purim, which represents tefillah, which is relegated to individuals, and it happened in Galus to individuals. Purim, therefore, is a yontif where the danger was to individuals. What does it say in the Alanisim of Purim? Kisha'omar aleihem Haman harasha. When Haman came against them, and the Jews Purim time are referred to as Yehudim. A Yehudi is somebody who denies idolatry, and therefore he has God's name in his name, Yehuda, Yehudim. So that's an individual thing. It's a very individual thing. Every individual has his ability to deny idolatry or accept it. It's an individual, and Jews, Purim time, Megillas Esther only speaks about Yehudim, not Yisraelim, not Israel, Yehudi. And that's a, and the danger was only to individuals. How so? Because Purim time, what did Haman wanted to do? He wanted to annihilate all the Jews. Okay. Now, we have a promise that all of Klal Yisrael can never be annihilated. It's impossible. Not only that, we even have a promise that no one tribe will ever be annihilated. All 12 tribes will always exist. Okay? So Haman could never have been successful in destroying all the Jews. The danger was not really real for what he wanted to do. Okay? And that's why Mordechai tells Esther very clearly, Im tacharesh tacharishi bo'es hazos, if you'll keep quiet at this time, Rebach b'hatzola yamud la'yehudi b'makom achar, I'm sure that salvation will come to the Jews from another quarter. You'll be the one to suffer. We don't need you necessarily to save the Jewish people, because Haman can't be successful in destroying the whole Jewish people. So his decree will surely be nullified. The question is, do you want to be involved in it or not? That was how Mordechai presented it to Esther. So what was the danger? That Haman would kill individuals. Couldn't kill the entire people, but he could kill individuals. So it was an individual danger. It was an individual salvation. It happened when the Jewish people were considered as individuals, not as a nation. And therefore, Omar Aleihem, Haman came against them as individuals, and each one was referred to as a Yehudi, not Israel. Okay. Hanukkah, on the other hand, was a danger, a national danger, a danger against the Jewish people, as a nation. Okay. It was not really a danger to individuals, because what would have happened had they not fought? The decrees against keeping the Torah, so one of two things would have happened. When it came to the positive mitzvahs, they were exempt from them, because you don't have to give your life for a positive mitzvah. So they would have not kept mitzvahs. If they would have forced them to transgress negative mitzvahs, so the halacha is in a shas hashmad, when the goyim want to repress Judaism, then you have to give your life for every mitzvah, negative mitzvah. Even if they want you to change, Jews wear one kind of shoelace, and goyim wear a different shoelace which shows their goyim, and the goy wants you to change shoelaces, or he'll kill you, you have to be killed for every mitzvah. And what's the logic behind that? Why in a shas hashmad, when goyim want to repress Judaism, you have to give your life for everything, whereas under normal circumstances, if they don't want to repress Judaism, the goy wants a steak. It happens to be Shabbos. So he tells the Jew, cook me a steak or I'll blow your brains out. He's allowed to cook the steak. The only three things he's not allowed to do is sexual immorality, idolatry, and murder. The goy comes and says, murder so-and-so, or I'll kill you, you have to be killed. He says, live with this married woman, or I'll kill you, you have to be killed. Serve idolatry, you have to be killed. But every other mitzvah, you are allowed to, what's it called, to save your life. Yahorik v'al-yav, what's it called, yavor v'al-yahorik, pikuach nefesh. Why, when it's a shas hashmad, does, for every mitzvah, you have to be killed? Because If the logic behind it is the following. If any nation could come along and try to repress Judaism, and we would be able to give in and live, then basically you could eradicate Judaism. But if you have to, if the individuals have to give their life in order that Judaism can't be eradicated, because they can't kill us all. So some Jews will survive and keep the Torah. But if we gave in, then the individuals would live, but the Torah, the religion would be eradicated. And therefore, the individual has to sacrifice himself for the nation. That's what Shas HaShmad is. So Hanukkah was not a danger for the individuals, because individually people would have died. Okay, the Shashem. So they got to share in the world to come. What was the danger? That Judaism would be eradicated. That Klal Yisrael, and there's no promise. We have a promise the Torah will not be forgotten forever, but it can be forgotten temporarily. The Gemara even speaks about times that Nishtakach Torah Yisrael, and that Reb Chiya brought it back. So it can't be that the Jewish people will be destroyed temporarily, because if they're destroyed temporarily, that's it, physically. But spiritually, we can have Judaism eradicated temporarily and have it come back. But it's possible to eradicate Judaism for a temporary time. And therefore, the sakana by Hanukkah was a national sakana, not an individual danger, the opposite of Purim. Therefore, the sakana came not through an individual, but through an empire. Kishomad aleihem, kishomad malchus yovan harisho al amcha Yisrael. Not aleihem, not on individuals, but it was a malchus yovan against malchus Yisrael. It was a nation against a nation, an empire against an empire. It wasn't an individual thing. It was a national thing, nation against nation. Whereas Haman, the Gemara says, Haman was not a king. He didn't even represent an empire. Adam, he was just an individual. So the danger was to individuals. It was by an individual. And by Hanukkah, it was a danger for the nation, by a nation. Completely different kind of thing. And therefore, who was the ones who brought about the salvation? By Hanukkah, by Purim, it was individuals, Mordechai and Esther, two individuals. By Hanukkah, it was not individuals. It was the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol has the unique position that once a year he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he represents the entire Jewish people. He is the embodiment of the Jewish people when he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's the Shliach, he's the agent of all of Klal Yisrael. So in the Kohen Gadol is the whole nation. And it wasn't just him and individuals. It was Kashmonai, Banav, it was families. Not Mordechai and Esther as individuals, but families. The Kohen Gadol, who represents the entire Jewish people at least once a year, and families, because every Jewish home is a miniature of Klal Yisrael. That's what's called the bias, the Jewish home, is a small society. It's a small macrocosm of the entire nation. So Purim was brought about by individuals, for individuals, against an individual, and Hanukkah was brought about by the representatives of the nation, for the nation, against another nation. Therefore, also, on Purim, it mentions where the miracle happened. Bimei Mordechai ve'Esther b'Shushan Abira. Hanukkah doesn't say, Bimei Matasyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmoneo ben Av, the Eretz Yisrael. Kesha'omad Malchus Yovan Arisho. Why? Because he doesn't have to tell me where it happened. It had to happen in Eretz Yisrael. Since it was a national thing, it was a nation against a nation, we're only a nation in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, what's it called? It's why when it says Kishomda Malchus Yovan Arishal Amcha Yisrael, it means in Eretz Yisrael. Can't mean anywhere else, because we're not Amcha Yisrael anywhere else. So it didn't have to mention where it happened. Whereas Purim had to mention where it happened. Um, Okay? And therefore, the Yontif of Hanukkah, like we said, is a Yontif that strengthens the concept of the receiving of the Torah. Now, when we receive the Torah, we received it as one nation, as one entity, not as individuals. Right? It says that we received it ki'ish echad b'lev echad, like one person with one heart. And it wasn't just a nice thing. It had to be like that. Because God can give the Torah to individuals, but individuals can't receive the Torah. Because the Torah is one entity of 613 mitzvahs. And like we've pointed out many times, there is no individual that could ever keep 613 mitzvahs. Because that's it's a myth. No one can say, well, I can keep, even potentially, it's impossible. Why? Because if you're a Kohen, you have mitzvahs that no other Yisrael or Levi has, but you're also missing mitzvahs that Yisraelim have. Because a Kohen will never fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen as a father, because he's exempt from it. So a Yisrael has mitzvahs that a Kohen doesn't have, and a Kohen has mitzvahs Yisrael doesn't have. If you're a man, you have mitzvahs that no woman could ever do. But if you're a woman, you have mitzvahs no man can ever do. At least in my lifetime, I'm hoping that no man will ever bring the sacrifice after childbirth. That is a woman's mitzvah, right? So unless you're a Kohen Levi Yisrael, man and woman wrapped into one, which today may be possible, but under normal circumstances was not, you can't have 613 mitzvahs. So where is this idea of 613 mitzvahs? The answer is we didn't receive the Torah as individuals. We received it as a conglomerate called Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has 613 mitzvahs. And each individual has their share. The same chelkeinu b'sorasecha. Everybody has a share, a part in the Torah. But no one individual has the whole Torah. And it's only when the Jewish people are a people that the Torah is complete. And that's why the mitzvah of Hanukkah represents its national aspect. How so? What's the mitzvah? It's not a mitzvah on individuals. The bare mitzvah of Hanukkah is ner ishu beso. One candle per household per night. That is the base mitzvah. Notice every night you light one candle, and it doesn't make a difference how many people are in the house, one candle per household. It's a mitzvah on the household, not on individuals. You can do it nicer, and everybody can light a candle. And you can light a candle for every night, but that's extras. The base of the mitzvah is a mitzvah on the home. It's not a mitzvah on individuals. Whereas Megillah is a mitzvah for every individual. Every individual has to read the Megillah. It's better to read it in public because it's more persumei nisa. But the mitzvah is on individuals. It's not on public. If you're alone at home, you have to read the Megillah yourself. Masha'en came by Hanukkah. There's a mitzvah on the home. It's not a mitzvah on the individuals. Therefore, Purim represents the written Torah. The written Torah is what we read the Megillah. The Megillah is part of Tanakh. It's part of the written Torah, not the oral Torah. And the written Torah is the body of Torah, because the danger was a physical to the body of the Jewish people. And the body of the Torah keeps the body of the Jewish people, the physical existence of the Jewish people going. That's why when we were going to be given the written Torah, if we didn't accept it, we'd be buried. Shom teik furaso, talking about the physical death of the Jewish people. You don't bury a soul, you bury the body. So God put the mountain over us, and he said, if you don't accept this written Torah, you're going to be buried here, under the mountain. So the physical Torah represents the physical life of the Jewish people, and that is Purim, because Purim, the danger, was a physical danger. We weren't in any spiritual danger. Haman didn't care if we kept the Torah, didn't keep the Torah. He just wanted to destroy us, like Hitler, Yimach Shemo. So Purim was a physical danger, and therefore it celebrates both tefillah, which is more or less something that has to do with the physical life of a person. What are we daven for? Physical things. Tefillah is called chayishah. Tefillah basically is for this world. Most of tefillah is davening for parnasa, for children, for whatever else, the physical things in this world. And it represents the written Torah, and therefore the mitzvah of Purim is a written Torah, Megillah. Masha'ein Kain, Chanukah, what's it called, is Torah Shebal Peh. Chanukah was not even written down. When the Torah Shebal Peh was, it remained oral Torah. There is no Megillah for Chanukah. It's not part of Tanakh. It's all oral Torah. The oral Torah is the neshama of the Torah, because the neshama of the Jewish people was in danger by Chanukah, not the body. And therefore, the mitzvah remained Torah Shebal Peh. The laws of Chanukah aren't found in the Mishnah. That even when we wrote down and made Torah Shebal Peh into a written form, this wasn't written down. It remained oral. Because the whole Yontif of Chanukah represents the oral Torah. And therefore, since the danger of Chanukah was a national danger and it was brought about by another nation, nation against nation, empire against empire, Kishom the Malchus Yavan Harishah al Amcha Yisrael. So therefore, the Yavanim wanted to destroy our specialness as a nation. Okay? And therefore, the Yavanim were more or less the antithesis of Klal Yisrael. As a nation, they wanted to usurp us and take our place. And everything that they represented was the antithesis of what we represent. For instance, the Jewish people, what's the hallmark of Klal Yisrael? That we believe in God. That God created us in His image, and we believe in one God. We're one nation, we believe in one God. The Yavanim created, so we believe that we're created in God's image and we have to act in a godly way. The Yavanim did just the opposite. They had gods, unlike all the other Avodah Zarah. What was their God? Supermen and superwomen. They created God in their image in order to justify all the terrible things they did, they attributed to their gods. Their gods murdered each other, and they stole each other's wives, and they, what's Greek mythology? Right? It's worse than any television soap opera, right? What those gods did one to the other. So what did the Greeks do? They created God in their image in order to justify the terrible things they did, because my God doesn't. And God created us in His image in order to demand from us that we act in a godly way. Mam is the opposite. And there's a medrash in last week's Sedra that mentions that idea. And in the beginning, the medrash is very difficult, but what I just told you now makes it understandable. The medrash says that tzaddikim, their God stands on them. And Rishoyim, they stand on their God. Why? Yaakov Avinu had a dream that God was standing over him on a ladder. And Paro had a dream that he was standing on the Nile, and the Nile was the god of the Egyptians. So Rishoyim stand on their god, and Tzaddikim, God stands on them. Now, on the surface, it seems just the opposite. If anything, Tzaddikim stand on their god. We exist because of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Rishoyim make their god, so their god stand on them. Right? They create their gods. But if you think about it, what it means is the following. A tzaddik's whole purpose in life is to bring godliness in the world. So God stands on them. And their purpose is to bring God into the world, to bring godliness into the world. On the other hand, Rishoyim, their purpose is to make themselves great. So they create gods to give themselves a standing. They create gods in their image to give themselves a place to exist and to justify what they do. So the Rasha stands on his God. He uses his God to give himself a standing. Whereas the Tzaddik gives God a standing in the world, and he is that's why the Avos are called the Merkava, like the chariot of God. They bring God's presence into the world. So in that respect, the Greeks were the opposite of the Jewish people in vis-a-vis our perspective on God. we believe we're created in God's image, and they created their gods in their image. Next thing is the and that's why by Hanukkah, it doesn't say that the Greeks wanted to do things against us. It just says when they emerged as a nation, that in itself was the danger. Haman, on the other hand, wasn't a danger as an individual. He was a danger because of what he wanted to do. Because of what he wanted to do against us. But Hanukkah, the danger wasn't what they wanted to do, it's what they were. Just because Sha'am the Malchus Yavan or Sha'am Israel was Vahashkicham Torah Sefer, to make us forget the Torah. Now, the in the Alanisim of Hanukkah, it says, Rabin Biad Miatim, Giborim Biad Haloshim, Rabin Biad Miatim, Tzmeim Biad Tahorim. So many learn that it's the miracle. The miracle was that the few and the weak won over the many and the strong. But then if you learn like that, what's the second part? Is there a miracle that righteous people win over wicked people? Is there some kind of unwritten law of nature that righteous people always lose? And if they win, it's a miracle? So it doesn't fit. Therefore, based on what I'm telling you now, it means something else. We're now comparing these two nations. They are the antithesis of each other. We are few and weak. That's part of the, it's part of the description of our nation. What does it say in the Torah? Why does God love us? Ki atem hama'at mikol hayom. Not because you're numerous. There's more Chinese than us. So why does God like us? Because we're few. Because we make ourselves little. We're not haughty. We're humble. We're a humble nation. Atem hama'at mikol ha'amim. So ma'atim is the hallmark of the Jewish people. We're chaloshim, we're weak physically. Why? Because Torah weakens a person. Hakol kol Yaakov. Yaakov's strength is with his voice. Torah and tefillah, not with his hands. Hayadayim de'esa. So the hallmark of the Jewish people is that we are weak. We are pure. We're tzaddikim. And we are people who toil in Torah. That is the description of the Jewish people. What are the Yavanim? The opposite. They're numerous. They're strong. They're Tameh. They're Rishoyim. And they're Zaydim. All of those things are the antithesis of what the Jewish people are. So we have the Jewish people and their nemesis, their the anti, the opposite of the Yavanim. And that's why by Hanukkah it says Rafta Esrivam. There was a struggle, there was a judgment, there was a revenge that had to be taken, because they wanted to take over what we were. They wanted to portray themselves as the chosen nation, and not us. They wanted to take away what we were by being the opposite. And therefore, but what?
I don't understand. How could they want to be the chosen people?
Not chosen by God. They wanted, forget about chosen, they wanted to be the nation that was the one that guided this world, not us. We believe that God chose us to be Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, to be a empire of representatives of God, that the whole world, we're the ones that are the Movilim. I don't know how to say that in English.
Leaders.
What? The leaders? Okay, but it means more the
driving
force of the world. And they wanted to be the driving force of the world. That's the idea. And therefore, the Yavanim opposed anything that showed the specialness of the Jewish people. Those mitzvahs. What were the mitzvahs that they opposed? They opposed Shabbos. Because Shabbos is something special to the Jewish people. A goy who keeps Shabbos is Chayav Misa. Shabbos shows that we are the Ben Zug. Shabbos and us are one. So they wanted to obliterate Shabbos. Bris Milah obviously shows that we're special, that we have that relationship with God, that we think that makes us the leaders of the world, or the ones that are the driving force of the world. Rosh Chodesh is something that we're the ones who control time. We decide when the times are, when the months are, when the holidays are. It's up to the Jewish people to decide that. It's Klal Yisrael as a klal that does that. They wanted to obliterate the concept of Jewish women, because what is the foundation of the holiness of the Jewish people? Women. Because what determines whether any person belongs to that nation or not is who your mother was. And up until recently, mothers were women. So therefore, what's it called? Whether you are part of the Jewish nation or not depends on who your mother was. Your father could have been the biggest tzaddik. If your mother wasn't Jewish, you're not part of the nation. And your father could have been the biggest goy rasha. If your mother was a plain pashat yidna, you're part of the Jewish nation. So they wanted to defile Jewish women. And last thing was money. They made decrees that we should engrave on any material thing that we own, Ein lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. We don't have a share in the God of Israel. We have no chelek. There's nothing to do. Money, God. Money is whatever you can use it, right? It's just a thing to enjoy. And we have more money than you have. Your money's nothing special.
What about
Kishmut? What? Kishmut?
That's very neat.
Yeah, but that's a prat. In other words, that's a detail. But these things are the foundation of the Jewish people. Shabbos is the foundation. Yeah. What you eat, what you wear. So there's a lot of things that Jews do that, because we're special, we do them. But that's not what makes us special. Bris Milah makes a Jew special. Keeping Shabbos makes us special. And the fact that we're the ones who decide time makes us special. It's not just a detail about what special people do. It's that which is the essence of our special. That's the difference. And therefore, what is the symbol of the victory of Hanukkah? The menorah. You know what the Gemara says about the menorah? Why did we have to light a menorah in the Mishkan? God needs our light. He lit up us up with a pillar of fire in the night and a cloud in the day for 40 years. He needs us to add our little candles. So what does it say in the Gemara? So why? What was the menorah symbolized? Shashchin Ashor of Israel. The menorah, the fact that it burned, the Ner Maravi, the western candle, never went out. It showed that God's presence existed amongst the Jewish people. So the menorah, and especially the staying power of the menorah, represents that God is amongst the Jewish people. That's the symbol of Hanukkah. And that's why it lasted 8 days, because the number 8 is symbolic of the Jewish people. The Goyim have 7 mitzvahs, nature. We're above nature. We have Bris Milah, 8 day. So the fact that the menorah lasted 8 days from that miraculous oil is the essence of the Jewish people. that's why it says that 2 things were affected on Hanukkah. One is La'amcha Yisrael Asisa Teshua Gedola, a great salvation. What was the salvation? The Beis Hamikdash was saved, and we had a royalty, an empire for the next 200 years, because that was part of Hanukkah, this idea of the empire of the Jewish people. But that's all gone. So it says, U'furkan kayom hazeh. And a purkan till today. What's purkan? The word lefarek means to shell something. You have a shell and you have a nut. Taking the nut out of the shell is called mefarek. It's one of the malachas of Shabbos. You're not allowed to take the grain out of its casing. That's called mefarek. It's a told of dosh of what's it called? Threshing. Threshing, you take the outer covering and you remove it and take out that's called piruk. Piruk means to unload something. So purkan means that the Jewish people were in danger of being swallowed up by the Greeks, and God extracted us from the chaff, from the Greeks, and gave us our own identity back. That's what a purkan is. And that's why it says that when they finish, the achar kei bo bonecha, what was the miracle of Hanukkah? That we became children to God. That's our specialness. All nations are created by God, but we're God's children. And that unique specialness was enhanced by Hanukkah. And therefore it says we came back, Lidvir Beisecha. Lidvir Beisecha was we came back into the Holy of Holies. That's Torah, because that's what's in the Holy of Holies, the Torah. So we came back to our standing of Torah. And then Upinu es Heichalecha, we cleared out the Heichal from the idolatry. That represents the fact that we are tzaddikim and they were Rishoyim. A person who serves idolatry is a Rasha. So we showed our the fact that we're tzaddikim. The Tiharu es Mikdashecha, we purified the Mikdash. That shows that we are Tahorim. We're pure people and they are Tameim, which is what we said before. Tahorim, Tameim Biat Tahorim, Rishoyim Biat Tzaddikim, and Zaydim Biat Roshke Sorasecha. And once we return to being tzaddikim and tahorim and oske Torah, which is represented by these three things, what's the next thing we did? The hidliku neiros v'chatzos kachecha. We showed that specialness by lighting the menorah. And God showed how special we are by letting it last for 8 days.
That's not written over there.
Written where?
In the
Tila. It is.
Doesn't it say that God made miracles for 8 days?
No. I'm saying, but that's the hidliku neiros. Right, the our lighting the menorah showed our specialness. In Allah Nisim, we're talking about what we did, not what God did. The and therefore the holiday of Hanukkah was established by the Sanhedrin. The Kavu Shmona Shemei Hanukkah. They established the 8 days of Hanukkah. But Purim doesn't say that. It says what happened. And it doesn't say that they established Purim, because Purim wasn't established by a Sanhedrin. You know how Purim was established? Kimu v'kiblu ayudim aleihem. The Jews accepted Purim individually. It was an acceptance of the individuals, and that's how Purim became a yontif. But Hanukkah, which is a celebration as a nation, the nation had to accept. Who's the representative of the nation in accepting for the nation? The Sanhedrin. So they had to establish Hanukkah, whereas Purim wasn't established. Purim was accepted by the individuals. And if all the individuals accepted it, it became a yontif for all generations. So that is what Hanukkah is all about. Hanukkah is the concept of the specialness of the Jewish people through Torah and mitzvahs, and that is what makes us a goy gadol, and that's why four times in the what's it called, in the Allah Nisim, it says the word gadol. That's what makes us great. Okay, and that's why the last day of Hanukkah is called Zos Hanukkah, because it corresponds to Zos HaTorah, and Zos HaBracha, and Zos Os HaBris. All the things that make us unique is Zos. You can point with your finger. I can point out, this is it. So that's what Hanukkah is all about. And that's the concept of Hallel. When do you say Hallel? Only when an empire falls. And we become again Avdei Hashem. Hallelujah, hallelujah, Avdei Hashem. Purim time, we were still slaves to Achashverosh. Hanukkah, we got back our nationhood. And we were, independent again. and that's why Hanukkah is a more spiritual celebration. And Purim is a more physical celebration. Eating, drinking. Because Purim, our body was in danger. So we celebrate eating, which is the kiyum of the body. Hanukkah, our souls were in danger, so we say Hallel, the Hodah, which is a spiritual thing. Okay. Thinking that perhaps that's the argument between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether you light 1 to 8 or 8 down to 1. Because there's two ways of emphasizing the specialness of the Jewish people by taking away the specialness of the nations of the world or by emphasizing our specialness. Beis Shammai said that you'd like from 8 to 1, they compare it to Poriah Chag. On Sukkot, we brought 70 sacrifices representing the nations of the world, but we brought it in descending order. So just like over there, we want the nations of the world to decrease. And when they decrease, we are emphasize what's special about us, so too the Hanukkah candles we light down. It's all to emphasize our specialness by de-emphasizing them. And they still said, no, you don't have to de-emphasize them. It's by emphasizing us more and more, Malim Bakodesh, by adding more and more light of what we're special, that brings out our specialness. We don't have to decrease their specialness. We just increase our specialness. And that's why Hanukkah is called a mitzvah chaviva. Rambam says that Hanukkah is called a precious mitzvah because it shows the preciousness of the Jewish people. Okay, now I want to relate this to something from last week's session, which will take a few seconds, and then I want to speak about Asara B'Tedes. You know, it says that Yosef put the brothers through a test and a kapara for them. He basically, it says, what's tshuva? When you come to the same situation, you don't make the same mistake. So Yosef tried to recreate a similar situation where one brother is seeming now as a threat to them, and they could have abandoned him, or they could have, instead of abandoning him, fight for him and sacrifice for him. Same thing when they thought he was a threat to them, and they sold him. So he put them in a similar situation where Binyamin now, his brother, sold also from the other mother, from Rachel, seems to be a threat to them. So they can either forget about him, or they can sacrifice for him, which they did. And he went and he tried to give a kapara to them. For everything they did to him, they got back, so it balanced things out. They threw him into a pit. He threw him into jail, all of them. Right? They accused him of being a threat to them. They were accused of being spies. And everything along the way, right, was to affect a kapara for them. Now, some of them, Farshim, say that what was the ultimate atonement for the selling of Yosef? Shibud Mitzrayim. The fact that we were enslaved in Egypt was a punishment for the Jewish nation because of Mechiras Yosef. There's only one problem. The Gemara, first of all, before any Mechiras Yosef, Avram already was not known there's going to be Shibud Mitzrayim. Yadoa Teida, Bris Ben Abasari. Geri Yezaracha, Beretz Lolohem, Vavodim, Ve'inu Osom, Arba Me'oshana. The whole concept of Shibud Mitzrayim was already decreed before there was any Mechiras Yosef from Avram. And the Gemara says that it's because Avram did certain things wrong that we had to be in Egypt for 210 years. So which is it? Is it because of Mechiras Yosef or is it because of the sins of Avram Avinu?
Why?
Because, very good question. And how about Binyamin? Even more. Yosef is easier to answer. Yosef is because, to a certain degree, he brought this on himself. He wasn't totally innocent. Okay? So he's also part of it. He caused himself to be sold by acting in a way that brought the brothers to what they did. He was a total victim. He brought it on himself. Binyamin is more difficult, but what I'm going to tell you will answer the question. So which is it? Is it Mechiras Yosef brought about Shibud Mitzrayim? Or what's it called? Or the sins of Avraham Avinu? Based on everything we've said till now, there's two concepts. There's things that affect the Jewish people as a people, and there's things that affect individuals. Shibud Mitzrayim was needed for every individual Jew, because Avram, the individual Jew, did some things wrong, and it created a blemish in the individuals of Klal Yisrael, the progeny, Geri Yezaracha, your Zera, your progeny, your seed, has been blemished. So therefore, they're going to need to have that blemish fixed up by Shibu Mitzrayim. And therefore, even individuals. Yitzchak was, by Bris Ben Abisorin, Ger Yezaracha affected Yitzchak as an individual, and Yaakov as an individual. Had it not been for Mechiras Yosef, the Kapara, the Shibud Mitzrayim, would have affected individuals only. Klal Yisrael as individuals. Mechiras Yosef added another dimension to the blemish. It now was no longer an individual blemish, it was a national blemish. Because the brothers united as a nation to sell Yosef. They made a basin, and they voted according to the majority. And all of them were included. And that's why even Binyamin, because it's not individuals, it's a nation. And when a nation does something, then even the ones who aren't directly involved are involved because they're part of the nation. That answers why Yosef too. So therefore there was a individual aspect to Shibud Mitzrayim that was brought about by Avraham Avinu. And there was a national aspect to Shibud Mitzrayim that it was directed against the Jewish nation, not just individual Jews. That was the Mechiras Yosef. Yeah. Same answer. He's part of the nation. Right? Even though there's another answer too, which was by Yosef. Reuven, right, instead of looking for a way, you know, to get out of it, but, you know, not, he should have stood up and said, like Yehuda did. He made a pshara. He made a, you know, a compromise. So he also was a little bit guilty in what happened. But you don't need that. According to what I'm saying, I have no proof to what I'm saying. It's an interesting idea that there are two aspects of Shibud Mitzrayim, one as individuals, one as a nation. The national aspect was added by Mechiras Yosef. What the implications of that are, I got to think about. Maybe in Sefer Shmos, you'll hear about it more. Yes and no, but no. Hine am b'nei Yisrael rav yotzu mimenu. Paro said. So you see that Paro had an idea of going against the nation, not just the individuals. There's, you find through Shmos both ideas in the beginnings of Shmos. There's the effect on the individual Jews, and then there's the idea of the nation of Egypt against the nation of the Jewish people. I'm going to have to develop it more as we go through, but there is such an idea. And if that's the case, then that national aspect was added by Mechiras Yosef, and the individual aspect was from Avraham Avinu. Could be. Okay. Let me just mention something else. And we'll
mention Avraham's behavior.
The three things that it says there. We once discussed it, and you keep these tapes?
Okay.
What? No, that was not one of them. That's only the Ramban mentions. The Gemara mentions three things. One is that he asked, how do I know? He questioned God, how do I know they're going to inherit Eretz Israel? The second thing was that he took the people in his kolel, who were learning Torah, and he put them in his army to save Lot. And the third thing was that he returned the people of Sodom back to Melech Sodom and didn't convert them and bring them under God's wing. Those are the three things that Gemara mentions. Okay. We're going to commemorate fast on Asar B'Teves on Sunday. And Asar B'Teves, according to some, is a special day, special fast day. There is no fast day except Yom Kippur that if it falls on Shabbos, you fast. All other fast days, if it falls on Shabbos, you push it to Sunday, or some of them we make early on Thursday, like Titus Esther, whatever. We don't fast on Shabbos. Had Asar B'Teves, according to the way the calendar is set up, can't fall on Shabbos. Can fall on Friday. Can never fall on Shabbos. But if it would, in the time when we didn't have a set calendar, we'd have to fast on Shabbos, according to some opinions. Because it says the same thing by Asar B'Teves as it says by Yom Kippur. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. in the midst of this day, meaning the day is significant. The other fast days not. I have a way of explaining which I think is very nice. What does that mean? The day is significant. Why is that different than the day of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash? And then if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, it passed on Sunday, not on Shabbos. I was thinking like this. There are four aspects to Golus. Okay? Asar B'Teves initiated the process of the first Golus. The siege was started on Asar B'Teves. The siege was broken. They broke through the walls on Shivasar B'Tammuz, in the second Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, and the Jewish people basically were exiled totally after Gedaliah was killed on Tzom Gedaliah. Till Gedaliah was killed, most Jews remained in Eretz Israel after the destruction of the temple. But once Gedaliah was killed, it's at that point they left Eretz Israel and went into Golus. Huh? First Beis Hamikdash. So I want to say that there are four aspects to Golus. Four things that Golus affects. The first is that Jews in Golus are vulnerable to the nations of the world. We are amongst them, and we're vulnerable to their plans. We see what's happened through Golus, of all the terrible pogroms and things that Goyim have done to us. So we're vulnerable to harm by the Goyim. That's the first thing. The second thing of Golus is that, that's one thing. Second thing is Shibud Malchios. We are no longer independent, but we are subservient to the nations of the world. The third thing is we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. And the fourth thing is we don't live in Eretz Israel. We're dispersed amongst the nations. So those are the four things. First thing is we're not independent. We are meshubed to the nations of the world. Second thing is that we are in danger. We're vulnerable to their, plans or whatever against us. The third thing is we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. And the fourth thing is we're not living in Eretz Israel. Those are the four things. If you think about it, each of the fast days represents a different aspect of Golus. Asar B'Teves, what happened then? They made a siege around us. We were no longer independent. We couldn't decide what comes and when we go. We had Goyim surrounding us, and they basically now were, to a certain degree, meshubid, we were subservient to them. Then on Shivasar B'Tammuz, they broke through the walls of Yerushalayim, and we were vulnerable to their, the danger of being, having Goyim amongst us, and the dangers of physical and spiritual dangers that they presented. On Tisha B'Av, the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And on Tzom Gedaliah, we basically went into left Eretz Yisrael. Those are the four aspects of Golus. Therefore, all three aspects, except for the first one, Shibud Malchios, did not actually happen on that day. For instance, when the Goyim broke through the walls of Yerushalayim, right, they didn't actually wreak havoc on us that day. It's just that day, potentially, we became vulnerable to them. But it wasn't the actual danger, right, wasn't actually affected that day. Right, they didn't do anything to us that day per se, but the effect potentially started that day. When the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, really, it wasn't destroyed on the ninth day. The fire started, but it wasn't destroyed really till the tenth day. In addition, it was basically spiritually destroyed 40 years before it was destroyed. All they did was destroy the shell. So the actual destruction of the Beis Hamikdash didn't occur on the ninth day, but it began, it was put into motion then, but it didn't actually occur then. Same thing with Tzom Gedaliah. The day Gedaliah was killed, all Jews didn't leave Eretz Israel, but it set into motion the process that eventually would lead to that. The only one that happened on that day itself was when the Goyim made a siege, we already were subservient to them. So the loss of our independence happened on that day. The other ones were precipitated by the day, but didn't actually happen on that day. Therefore, it doesn't make a difference if you fast the actual day or you push it off another day, because it didn't really happen on that day anyway. But on Asarah B'Teves, it happened that day exactly. So therefore, the day is significant. Even falls on Shabbos, you fast on that day.